Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, the podcast where we interview startup founders who have successfully raised capital. So today we have Murad and Rebecca of Stateless coming to us from Boulder, Colorado, one of my favorite towns in the entire universe. Hello, guys. Welcome.
Hi, Nathan.
Glad to have you here.
Yep.
Do you have snow on the ground in Boulder today? What's the weather? I love Boulder weather.
Oh, it's beautiful. I mean, you know, the snow is just going to melt away. So it's very dry, very nice, sunny.
Yeah. Yeah. Boulder has fun weather. You can be wearing shorts one day and making snow angels 2 days later. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Awesome. So let's just start off with the easy stuff. What is Stateless? Why did you start it?
So Stateless is a spinoff of research I was doing at my PhD at the University of Colorado. I've been working on the software-defined networking, which is like a new era of like handling computer networks. My PhD advisor and co-founder and our CTO, Eric, he has like a very broad experience. He got his PhD from Princeton, and we just like got along very well, and we started working together. We started working with AT&T and IBM, where we started like seeing a big problem in the IT infrastructure when it comes to the computer networks. So we developed a new platform that allows the networks to be more flexible, more agile, basically to handle more of the cloud movement. You know, like everything now is moving to the cloud. So there is like a lot of pressure on the infrastructure. It has to be scalable, has to be very resilient, has to be dynamic. If there's like a new applications, you know, like a new season, like a Black Friday, so there's like a burst of traffic, you want your network to be like to be able to handle that. So we designed a new platform that allows cloud service providers and network operators to have like a better network. So the challenge was like, how do you come with a software-based platform without sacrificing the performance? You know, because like now is like, we're talking about hundreds of gigabit of traffic with latency that milliseconds or microseconds. And that's our novelty comes in. And we have a patent for our technology. And once we had that, we published papers and top tier conferences, and then we decided to commercialize it. So gotcha.
And when did you decide to commercialize it?
So the idea started like in end of 2014, 2015. That's where we like came through the technology or the innovation or the breakthrough. And then by the end of 2015, it's like, we were like, oh, wow, we can commercialize that. I mean, and the reason why we thought about that, Eric and I, we have this belief that when it comes to the research, it's not only papers you publish and then that's it. You know, we wanted to have like a real impact in the industry, you know. So we wanted to take the technology out of the research lab and deploy it. And that's why we started thinking, and it was like, okay, did we just license the patent? Did we just like find someone to like create a company? And then we were like, what can we, like, why not us, you know, like build a company? So by 2016, that's where we officially formed a company for the,
Excellent. Great. Maybe turn your, speaker volume down just a little bit. I think we're getting a little bit of a feedback loop. That's perfect. I think it's gone. Perfect. Yeah. Good. So tell me about your capital structure. How many rounds have you raised? And has it all been VC, angel, friends and family, combination, any grants? You know, tell me kind of about your capital stack, if you will.
Sure. So the source of funding comes in and from grants and investors as well. Grants we've been very successful at, because coming from academia research, that's basically what we do. We apply for grants all the time. So we have a good experience in that. The first grant we got, it's called the I-Corps from the National Science Foundation. And the grant was like decided, like focus on market development, you know, like a very early stage companies that has only the co-founders that focus on finding a product market fit, you know. So the goal was like to interview 100 customers in 5 weeks. So it's very intense, and you get $50,000 if you get that, if you do that. So that was like the first grant we got for the company. And then we applied for another grant also from the NSF. It's called the SBIR, Small Business Innovation and Research, or Industry Research. Innovation Research. That was $250,000. And that's like more advanced. And now we are qualified to apply for phase two, which is $750,000. So we're going to apply with that. The good thing about these grants that they're like free money. You know, they don't take shares. There's no dilution happen to you. The downside is they take so long to hear back, like 6 to 9 months. I think it's worth it. A lot of co-founder asking me, like, is it worth it? I mean, it's an application. You write. But the good thing is, like, when you write down the application, that can also helps you from the business perspective, because the reviewers are also investors. You know, they want to see a case studies. They want to see the business model. You know, they want to see there is a competition, product market fit. So pushing yourself to write all these down also help you from a business, you know, like to think critically about these things, and also help us with VCs, which is the second source of funding. So the first funding we got was from angel investors. As you can imagine, like in an early stage, angels are more into like investing at this stage. They're like small checks from 25 to 75,000, like range.
And was that, did you target angels after receiving the grants, or is this later?
After we received the first grant, the $50,000 from iCor. And that's why, by the way, it was during Techstars. So we got accepted into Techstars Boulder. The first angel, actually, he gave us the money before we got into Techstars. He was very excited, and he believed in us. And then once we got into Techstars, that's one of the things, the advantage of getting Techstars, they have a good networks of investors and angels. So they connected me with a good number of them. And then we started talking. I raised, the total we raised was 337,000 during Techstars. Gotcha. And that was like all convertible notes.
Interesting. Okay. So let's unpack that a little bit and dive in. You know, you get into Techstars, very exciting based on the strength of the idea and grants and everything else. And then once you're in Techstars, are you proactively reaching out to mentors, or are the Techstars guys, you know, proactively making intros for you? Like, you know, kind of tell us how to work when you get into a top accelerator like Techstars. How do you work it to your advantage?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, the one thing about Techstars is you can think of them as like a place they can provide you with whatever you ask for. You know, nobody pushes you. Nobody will say like, hey, you should meet with investors or advisors. It's up to you. And that's why sometimes like companies, they don't take advantage of Techstars. It's a very, very hectic environment. But the thing is like, I made it clear to my manager at Techstars, and I was like, I want to talk with investors, you know, and I want to talk with early adapters, like companies who can adopt our technology. They started the two main goals, and how can you help me? You know, so I keep like sending him like list of VCs, investors that I think they are a good fit. They also like look around based on the bio I send them. So it's more from my side, like pushing them to do that. And they are like very transparent about that. They said, if we don't deliver what we ask for, we're going to give you your money and your equity back. You know, and they did deliver.
That's amazing. I remember when they came out with that kind of money back guarantee, which is just such a, you know, surprise. Like when that they announced that was pretty cool. Yeah. So to get that 300K, 330, what did you say? 330?
337.
337. how many investors did you identify as targets? How did you find them? I mean, how did you actually, you know, identify them? And then how many, you know, how many did you talk to and how many angels did you end up with? Kind of like paint a picture of the funnel there, if you
sure.
Could.
So being like, this is my first time raising money. So I was like wishy-washy, you know, like anybody who can give me money. That's what I thought, or like was desperately getting at. But the more I speak with them, specifically coming from a B2B business, and it's very, very high tech complex. I found myself like I had to kind of classify the investors I want to talk with, because the investors who want to invest in at this stage, like they got to believe in what we do and they got to understand the market, you know? So that was like my kind of criteria, like people who invest in this space know about like this space, or they just want to take a risk and it doesn't matter for them. They just like me or the team, you know, no matter like the first, I think the second and the third angel who came in, they don't have any technical background, but they just like the team. And they said, we don't understand, but we're just going to take a leap of faith on you. So these are the investors. And the other ones who I feel like trying to be smart and comparing us to SaaS companies and other tech companies, it was just like a waste of time, you know, because what are they asking for? The metrics they are asking for and what are they expecting is not realistic and it doesn't match our business. So I started like kind of classifying the investors based on that. And then the other thing I saw, so I took advantage of the investor who invests or committed, they introduce other investors as well. So they brought in other investors.
Yeah, you know, of course, good. What you're doing is somewhat, I mean, fairly technical, somewhat esoteric. How did you identify people that invest in your space? Like, were you looking at similar firms that and researching who invested in them? Or, you know, how are you finding?
So some of that was that. So there's like a similar companies in Boulder that started in Boulder. So they have early stage investors, and some of them, they became our investors as well. So I was successful in that regard. And then, all of my investors were like connections. I didn't like get anybody who was like just a cold calling. I met with some of them, but yeah, it didn't go through.
Okay, great. And are all the investors Boulder based or Colorado based, or did you go outside Boulder? And I also like to hear what the funding environment in Boulder is like. So, two part question.
Yeah, so that's a important and critical question. So most of my angels are Colorado based. The rest are from the Bay Area or like California, basically. I also like, I don't know if we have a chance, I'll tell you more about this geographical space from the VCs as well. That was like where the challenging part when we started like closing around and getting the 1 million. So we raised 1.1 million in the round after the pre-seed. And that was like a challenging when we started like talking to the Colorado area. When it comes to our space, they're very risk averse, you know, as opposed to like the Silicon Valley. Like they're more taking risk. They're okay to taking like leap of faith and a leap of faith on leap of faith. Yeah, leap of faith and customers and in their teams. And that was like very challenging for us. So basically I end up like going out of Colorado. And when I start building my funnel, the investors, a majority of them, they were like not from Colorado, actually. It was kind of sad. I really wanted like my investors or some of them, their VCs, to be here. But at this early stage, nobody wanted to come in. You know, everybody was like, show us some proof, show us some traction, and then we will come in. But the angels, yes, they were like happy to do that.
I think that's common. I've been doing a few of these interviews now, and I had guys in Dallas yesterday and Chicago, and you kind of hear a similar tale, you know, about the local investors are more risk averse. They want to see more traction, all that stuff. And then that was your seed round. And then Did you raise an A? I don't recall.
We call it like the pre-seed was the one during Techstars, and then the seed round is, yeah, following Techstars. That's what I was like hitting stronger on the VCs. I decided to kind of reduce the numbers of angels. And also the angels who came in, I kind of like made a limit that they there's like a minimum check size on how much they can invest, because I don't want just have an angel. Like I want them to be, and I was also very picky. I think part of it because we were like getting more confidence in ourselves, you know, in our technology and where we're heading and everything. So we started like getting more selective, basically.
Did you pitch Brad Feld and Foundry Group guys? They seem to be the tall tower or cast a long shadow, as they say, in the Boulder scene.
Yes, I did. I did pitch to Cloud Foundry, not to Brad Feld, to another partner. But yeah, I pitched to them. The feedback was similar. It was like, they don't understand. We don't understand the space very well, and we need more signals or more attraction. So like a lot of them VCs that I spoke with that didn't want to invest, some of them, yes, they were like, I put them in the lost column that I don't see any future interaction. But a good number of them now, like they are my follow-up for the Series A investment.
So let's talk about that. And Rebecca, maybe here's, throw this in your court, you know, thinking ahead towards the Series A, what sort of milestones, traction, biz dev deals, you know, how are you preparing for that next round, right? Because it gets harder and harder every step up, or the expectations rise. So I don't know if you want to tackle that.
Yeah,
or,
absolutely. Yeah, so I think as Murad mentioned when he was talking about that seed round, it is a lot about team and vision, and that's really where we found the buy-in from the investors that we closed that round with. But as we look down to the Series A, it's much more metric-driven. It's not as much about those, you know, softer team vision metrics. So since we are deeply technical, we aren't really holding ourselves to what you might consider like the SaaS metrics. So looking at things like revenue, what we've discussed with our current investors about commitments for Series A, as well as in these conversations we've had to this point, what we're really looking to accomplish in the next 18 months is some really successful case studies that we achieve through proof of concept deployments. So that's really from a business development where our focus is going to be. We're not really looking to do a large number of proof of concept deployments, but we are really focusing on some quality proof of concept deployments and some really strong customer reviews that we can bring into, you know, those Series A investors and prove that, you know, this is something the market wants so that we can then kind of blow it out into a larger sales force, larger team after that Series A. And then there are, of course, other metrics that we're looking at from the technical standpoint, and then also just overall market size and knowing the market, I think, is really important as we look to have those conversations with Series A investors.
Yeah, for sure. Other than getting your metrics and milestones in shape and getting the company kind of groomed, is there anything else you guys are doing on, you know, warming up investors for the next round? Are you starting to build relationships now, build that target list or build the funnel? Are you doing any kind of like, I know some startups will start sending like an update report to people they want to come in later. Are you doing any of that type of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we actually already have like a pipeline built for Series A. So as Murad mentioned, we had some really positive conversations in those seed round, but they just weren't quite ready. So we've, you know, marked those names down, have it all on a whiteboard somewhere so that we can keep those names top of mind. And, you know, also looking at bigger funds that we weren't ready to talk to in the seed round. So we definitely are very aware of who's in our pipeline, who we want to be in our pipeline. And we are being somewhat proactive with those investor updates. I think we want to have some really good news to share before we start having those be a more regular cadence, but certainly letting them know that we had a successful seed round and that, you know, here are our milestones that we're looking to hit. We'd love to talk to you, you know, in the upcoming months once we've hit those and have some really positive conversations about Series A.
Yeah, no, that's good. It's good.
Yeah, and also to add to that, Nathan, so one thing we did was also very well, and that's also an experience. I found like a lot of founders or CEOs lacking is like they don't know how to close the conversation in the right way with investors. Basically, what I mean by that is like there's a lot of stress in the founders, but you got to know what the investors are looking for. And the investors usually in the conversation, they don't tell you. So I made it clear that I became like more proactive and I asked the investors, okay, tell me what are the metrics you are looking for? So you can tell that this is a company you want to invest, you know, and that's very important for me because now I know what the investors are looking for. And if it's something that makes sense and I can deliver, then I will add them to the pipeline. If not, then I was just going to continue with them. And then and that's what we did. And the investor we met with, we decided to follow up. They all like have a clear metrics, you know, and line to what we want to do. And then we just move for that. And that's, I believe, going to give us like a better chance, you know, of success later.
Yeah, that's great. I think that is a good strategy, kind of knowing where the goalposts are and frequently confirming where those are with other investors is a good way to approach it. Do you anticipate going to Silicon Valley for this next round, you know, East Coast, somewhere else? I don't know if there are other clusters of investors that do your stuff. Or do you think you could raise it in Colorado?
So, yeah, I mean, again, I prefer if I had to choose, like, to be in Colorado. We already have, like, two VCs in Colorado. They show, like, a strong interest to come in for Series A investments. I mean, otherwise, I mean, I had to do what I had to do. You know, I have to do what I have to do. Is like, I will go to Silicon Valley. And we also got good interaction from Boston.
Okay.
That's area. There's like we spoke with top tier VCs. We still had like in touch with them. New York, I didn't get like that positive experience so far. I mean, they are on the radar, but yeah, most of the VCs outside of Colorado are going to be in Boston, New England area, and West Coast.
Will you or are you continuing to leverage Techstars at all for any of this following, or is that sort of done?
It's getting less and less relying on them. You know, I think the advantage of Techstars, like taking you, like getting you out of the ground, you know, helping you like the first step. But now I spoke with over 40 VCs, you know, like in the last year. So I think I have like a good network. I think it's still like that. They're coming in as a Techstar graduate that also have like some weight on it. But no, I don't see them like, I don't see myself like relying on them as I did like 6 months ago, you know.
Rebecca, is that a flying fish on your shirt?
Yes. Patagonia sweatshirt. It's really comfortable. Just a little plug for Patagonia. But, I mean, you know, the Boulder startup wearing Patagonia crews can be expected.
Yes, good. Patagonia is a cool company. I love what they're... I love their marketing or in some of the, you know, stances they take. It's good stuff. I could tell you flying fish stories, which I won't bother you with here, but they are the smelliest fish my wife and I sailed down to Mexico and they would fly up onto the boat and then like die and they would smell so bad. You have no idea. I don't know why they smell so bad. Anyway. Okay. Just on that light note, what, you know, kind of last question here, if there's, if you could rewind the clock, what one piece of advice would you give your younger self who was just starting out fundraising? And you can both tackle this if you want. You know, if you're going to do it all over again, or just general advice for founders starting out, getting ready to raise money.
I mean, honestly, I feel like the experience was overall positive for a first time. CEO running that. I did have like written down some notes. I was planning to write a blog, but I never get the chance. But I wrote some notes like to share with everybody. I think one of the things is like documenting your meetings. You know, all of my meetings with the VC, I never attended them alone. I always like have Erica or Rebecca with me in the meeting, because the more people you have, so we can digest after the meeting, you know, and also like you cannot make notes and communicate at the same time. So having another person, that's very important. Also, like how you represent yourself as a team, you know, is very, very important. You know, the team dynamic, you know, when Eric speaks as a CTO, when Rebecca speaks as biz dev and marketing, when I speak, like how to enter it, that's very important. The other thing is like expectation. You know, I think that's also like one thing I learned during tech stocks, because I was engaging with a lot of CEOs. So I see them like raising, you know, capital, and I see them like failing. And part of the big part of that is the expectation part. You know, I read a book I would like to share. It's called, I have it here in my note, The Art of Startup Funding by Alejandro Crimides. Have you heard of that book?
Heard of it.
I love that book. And the book was like awesome, that it was like setting your expectation. You know, it tells you like it's a long journey. Getting a term sheet doesn't mean that you get your funding. Signing the term sheet doesn't mean that you got the money, you know. So when I put that in my mind, you know, in terms of like the timeline and what I'm getting from these investors, that really helped me a lot. Didn't put a lot of stress on me. I also, I wasn't shy of sharing our weaknesses with investors. I wasn't hiding. So like, we're like a heavily technical team, you know, so we've been pushed hard by marketing, by sales, you know, business development, and we recognize that, you know, and we find ways like kind of like how to make our pitch stronger in that regard, and show that we are aware of this aspects. And then with all of that is like learn, digest, and adapt. You know, every meeting is like, if I compare my first pitch, is like, it's like the last pitches I have like way better, because my message was better. And, you know, so that's like overall like my experience. I look at it also as a sales pipeline, you know, like with these investors, because you got to keep track of the people you're talking with. You got to keep notes, you know, and follow up with them. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
All good stuff. No, I agree with everything there. Rebecca, any other anything else to add or chime in as?
Yeah, I mean, I think Murad's experience is definitely a little different than mine, since he's the founder, you know, and I'm joining the team a little bit later. But I think the most important thing as an early stage startup employee is be patient, which Murad spoke about in the fundraising process. But it's not going to happen overnight, and you need to have faith in your team that it's going to happen, even if it's not on your expected timeline. And if you don't have faith in your team, then that's a whole nother issue that we don't have to get into on this podcast. But I think, you know, being a good team member, being there to support and being patient throughout the whole process is great, not only for yourself, but also for the whole company culture overall.
Yeah, no, that's good. I think that's good advice. All right, guys. Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you, Rebecca and Murad. And I wish you guys continued success and, you know, enjoy the Boulder lifestyle. I'm jealous. I love Boulder. So
come on out. We'll be happy to show you around the office.
All right. Very good. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Thank you, Daniel. Bye.